Spring Nashville Studios, presented by Wholesale Inc. Mount Juliet. Start your engines. This is the Chasing Checkers Podcast with Chase McCain on Nashville's best sports talk,
ESPN
102.5 The Game.
Again, everyone, welcome into Chasing Checkers, ESPN 102.5 The Game on the Game Nashville app and online at GameNashville.com. We're on iTunes. Search Chasing Checkers, subscribe, rate, talking racing. And I have been so excited to do this show this week. I'm always excited, but after a wild night at Daytona, you get even more excited. Hope you all have had a great week. Happy 4th of July late. No, it was a fun weekend, though, down in Daytona. Actually, one of my really good friends got to go to his first Cup Series race and actually got to watch it from Kevin Harvick's pit, so pretty cool. Shout out to Ricky that was down there. But what a night. What a wild night. And it's funny. So full disclosure, I was actually at the Nashville SC game during the race, kind of having to keep up with it on my computer and watch, and went back and watched it, you know, in full later on. But just an amazing Daytona type race. And I think that the sport needed that. They needed a wild night. I did a TV hit with Channel 4 here in town, was talking about it, and that the ratings in Nashville 2 weeks in a row looking better, looking good. You know, it's always been popular in this market, but you have a wild finish the week before at Chicago, and then you have a wild night at Daytona. And I think that part of that is stage racing, that the stage racing has made basically at the end of every stage at a plate track is just like the end. And that's when you're going to get some of these big wrecks and big pileups, and one little mistake will take out half the field. Now, we will talk about that in depth here in just a little bit. And also William Byron, who was in one of those wrecks, he is going to join us a little later on in the show. But I want to start with the man of the hour, Eric Jones, one of the young guns that I have talked about since the beginning of this program, and about how they all have pressure on them to find victory lane and to be the new face of a new generation of NASCAR to help build this fan base back up to where it used to be. Eric Jones is one of those guys. And, you know, I've interviewed a lot of young drivers as of late and asked them all the question about the pressure that's on you to try and, you know, be the face and be the next guy. And, you know, they all give you the same answer of, no pressure. We're just out there racing. But there is pressure. And I think Eric Jones was one of those guys that you started to see that pressure. Well, it's off. It's done. It's gone. Because he has now been in victory lane. He is a NASCAR Cup Series winner. And was very, very excited when Rutledge Wood of NBC Sports interviewed him at the start-finish line.
Oh, boy. How about that race, boys and girls? Huh? That was something else, man. I thought we were out of it, and then all of a sudden we're right back in it and take the lead and ran away. But, wow, what an awesome race. ViaToyota.com on here, and my first Cup win, my first win at Daytona, my first Super Speedway win. What an awesome day, man. It's I'm out of breath. Too much smoke in the car from that burnout. I can barely breathe, but what an awesome finish.
Eric, the years of hard work, you came down, you got that checkered flag, all these fans on their feet. What do you want to say to them?
Thank you. Thank you so much. It was a lot of hard work to be here, man. I was thinking about my mom and dad right after the checker. My mom stayed home from this one. She's going to miss my first Cup win. So, hi, Mom. And my dad, man, he would have been so proud of the work we did to get here. It's just an awesome day for us.
That was Eric Jones with Rutledge Wood of NBC after winning his very first Cup race. And so something I want to touch on before I actually get into Eric Jones' career and his first win, he mentioned his parents and most notably mentioned his father. And for those of you that don't know, Eric's father passed away, I believe it was about 2 years ago. And so that's got to be tough. I mean, it's tough to lose a guy that has been with you throughout your career, that has helped you come up through the ranks, and for him to not be there for the cup win, you know, I think was probably tough on him. But just a cool story to hear the emotion, to feel the emotion along with him when he's, you know, two of the first people he mentions are his parents and the sacrifices that they made. And in the post-race press conference, he was asked about that and had a lot of nice things to say about his father.
And then thinking of my dad, you know, just wishing he could be here to see it. I mean, this was, you know, this was step one of the ultimate goal. I mean, the ultimate goal, obviously, cup championship. And the first step in that is winning a race. And then you win multiple races and hopefully contend for a championship at some point. So it would have sure been special to see his reaction to that last lap and his excitement. Because it would have been probably off the charts. I think he would have succeeded me on my excitement crossing the start-finish line.
His father passed away from cancer a couple years ago. And I think for everybody, you know, enjoying this win, enjoying a guy getting his first cup win, 22 years old, the emotion changed. That you were excited for him, but you also were like, this is a kid missing his dad. And you kind of, it tugs on the heartstrings. And, you know, we're going to hit some emotional things in this show because for those of you that have been longtime NASCAR fans, you know what happened 25 years ago this week. But to just hear that excitement with Erik Jones, and then he mentions his dad, and there's that little bit of a change in his voice because it's like he knows his father's with him. But it's like he wishes he could just give his dad a big old hug in victory lane. So just a lot of emotions for Erik Jones, and well-deserved, very, very cool to see him enjoy the moment and get his first cup win. Because look, let's just be honest. There's been pressure on him. And he was asked in the post-race press conference about if he thought that it would have taken him this long to get that cup win.
I thought it would have took longer. I mean, when I won the Snowball Derby in 2012, I was 16 years old, and I didn't have any opportunities in NASCAR at that point. So I kind of thought I was going to find something else to do pretty soon. But, you know, I thought at that point I was going to get maybe some, you know, smaller opportunities for other teams. But that kind of changed everything for me. So it really, these last 6 years have flown by. I mean, it hasn't. It doesn't seem like, what was it, 2,044 days ago? It doesn't seem like that. So it's definitely went by quickly. And, you know, I never would have thought 6 years would have went by so quick. But looking back right now over the 6 years and what all has happened and places I've been, things I've done, it's flown by.
Erik Jones talking about the Snowball Derby back in 2012 in which he won. And everybody kind of, that's when he got on the map. Everybody kind of looked at him and thought, okay. This kid's special. He's got something. And worked his way up through the Truck Series, the Xfinity Series, and now driving for Coach Gibbs in the Cup Series, celebrating his first win at Daytona. Martin Truex Jr., who is a guy that has had a lot of success this year. Of course, he is now part of the Big Three with Kyle Busch, Kevin Harvick, and Truex. And he wasn't really asked about his night at the beginning of his press conference. Everything was about Erik Jones, and he had high praise for his former teammate.
Yeah, I mean, definitely happy to see those guys get their first win. I can remember what my first win felt like. It's pretty damn amazing. So for them to get it here at a big race, you know, it was really cool to see, and really, you know, obviously wanted to beat him, but happy for him. If you're going to, you know, run second to somebody, that's kind of the story, I guess, you'd want to see out of it. So, you know, all in all, I think for us, it was a good night and, you know, did all the things we needed to do. I'm just, I got to work on my mirror driving skills. I'm not real good at it. I never have been. And, just happy, you know, to get through here alive and finish. I mean, I joked all week that I hadn't finished this race in 8 or 10 years, and that's not, I mean, it's kind of funny, but it's not really, it's true and sad. So, to finally get to the end of one of these races and then have a shot at it was cool. I wish I could have done a better job for my team because, you know, our car was really fast and, you know, I felt like it was for sure the best car we've had on the plate tracks probably the last 2 years. And the good news is it's still one piece, so I feel good about that. But, you know, definitely congrats to Erik and his team. They've been fighting hard to get to where they're at, and always good to see a first time winner. Now maybe ISC and those guys can be a little bit happier about things.
Little jab at the end towards ISC by Martin Truex Jr., but happy for Eric Jones, as are a lot of people. And you may recall that Eric Jones actually raced with Truex last year at Furniture Row when Gibbs wanted him to move to the Cup Series, but he didn't have a spot for him. Knew that they could move on from Matt Kenseth at the end of last year and open up that 20 car for Eric Jones, and they did that. So everybody was celebrating Eric Jones, but there were a lot of drivers that were angry at one individual. I will tell you who that is, if you don't know already, and you will hear from some of those drivers. Also, William Byron coming up here a little later on in Chasing Checkers here on ESPN 102.5 The Game and online at thegamenashville.com.
Yo, Nashville, Buck Rising, Tennessee Titans insider, and the host of your favorite new podcast, Tackling Music City, here. Join us as we talk about all things two-tone blue with current and former players, football experts, and analysts from all walks of life every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday on thegamenashville.com, in iTunes, Apple Podcasts, and every weekend on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Here at Chasing Checkers, ESPN 102.5 The Game, online at thegamenashville.com. Game Nashville app, iTunes, SoundCloud. You can find us everywhere. Just search Chasing Checkers. Follow on Twitter as well, at Chase on Game. So, wrapping up Daytona, William Byron coming up here in just a few minutes. Driver of the 24 Chevy for Hendrick Motorsports. Had a good run going at Daytona before he got caught up in the wrecks, like a lot of people. So, many drivers are angry with one guy, and that would be Ricky Stenhouse Jr. Now, I'm watching this race, and I see him up front. He's the defending race winner. He has made a name for himself running at plate tracks, knows how to win at Daytona and Talladega, and he made some mistakes. He made some rookie-type mistakes and took out a lot of cars. Let's start with one of those guys that was not happy. This was, I guess, the second wreck of the second big one, I should say. And that is Kyle Busch gets taken out. Kyle Busch was behind William Byron, and Ricky Stenhouse Jr. gets into him. Kyle Busch not happy about it.
I don't know. Just, disappointing to get crashed out by the same guy that caused the first crash. But our Interstate Batteries Camry showed some good speed. We showed some good patience there in that first stage. We were able to come home second, at least grab some points there. But, I don't know. You always come to Daytona waiting to crash and trying to figure out when and where and just hope that you can walk away from it. So that's really frustrating and disappointing to have to race these races like that, just on the fence, on the line of when are you going to wreck, But we go on. We go next week, I guess.
So Kyle Busch not happy there. Now, look, for those of you that are avid NASCAR fans, you know that Kyle Busch is not one of those people that is going to mince words. If he is mad at somebody, he's going to call them out. He's going to do it where he may not always say their name, but you're going to know who he's talking about, and he's going to answer questions truthfully. Well, I think he answered that truthfully there on NBC after getting wrecked in the race. So that leads us to this week. All the drivers go and they participate, or not all the drivers, I should say, but a lot of drivers go to the media center and participate in pre-race press conferences, usually on Thursday or Friday, depending on when the race is. And of course, they're at Kentucky this weekend. Well, with such a wild race at Daytona, the media, they're not going to forget about it. So they decided to bring it up today with Kyle Busch. I will play the question and then Kyle's answer.
Dustin Long, NBC Sports. Did Ricky Stenhouse Jr. reach out to you this week? If so, did you communicate? And if so, was it worthwhile or a waste of time?
He did not reach out. I am disappointed that he did not.
Why?
You wipe out half the field. I'm pretty sure there would be a pretty busy Monday for him, but there wasn't. So apparently he just doesn't care.
So does that change how you race him?
I can't worry about people that far back in the field.
Thank you.
Kyle Busch throwing shade, and I love it. I'm cool with it. Because you know what? If that's true, if Ricky Stenhouse Jr. did not reach out to these drivers, then shame on him. I get it's Daytona. I get it's a product of restrictor plate racing, but you made a mistake, man. And I like Ricky. Ricky's a good guy. But he made a mistake. He made several mistakes. He did not look good Saturday night and didn't deserve to win the race after. Look, I know that happens, but didn't deserve to win the race, and he had his own trouble later on in the night. But you can't make those kind of mistakes and then not reach out and just have the that's Daytona, that's plate racing. It just is not a good look. Now, I wanted to play a piece from their in-race broadcast. Dale Earnhardt Jr., of course, who is, of course, one of the best at restrictor plates, and the Jeff Burton, who was pretty good in his own right as well. They break down this wreck and give their explanation of what exactly happened. I want you to take a listen to this, especially the Dale Jr. part, because he pretty much, you know, can point out where things went wrong.
So he gets into the quarter panel, 18. 18's trying to get down there in side draft, and the 17 of Ricky Stenhouse is not following the 24, not following his line exactly. He's also trying to side draft. So Ricky's trying to side draft 18. 18's coming down to side draft the 24. Just a couple bad decisions there. Trying to, you know, you got to be aggressive on the side draft, and that's what happens sometimes when there's three or four guys trying to do the same thing.
So what the 17's trying to do right there is he's trying to get as close to the left rear quarter panel of the 18 to slow him down, and he gets into him. You know, he came up the racetrack so aggressively, I almost wonder if he got tight or something. Like,
maybe.
You know, he can see that the 18 is right next to William Byron. The 18 can't go any lower. Watch what happens right here. So see how close the 18 and the 24 are right here. 18, he's not going to go any lower. The 17's up the racetrack and gets into the 18. It just makes me wonder if Ricky Stenhouse Jr. didn't lose the front of the car and get up the racetrack and get into the side of him in trying to side draft, and you're close to somebody, if your car gets tight and it moves 2 feet, now you're into the left rear quarter panel and causing a wreck.
So Kyle Busch and William Byron end up wrecked after this with Ricky Stenhouse. Now, there was a little bit of a moment where Kyle Busch goes over to William Byron's car, and he kind of wondered if he was blaming him because Kyle looked angry when he was talking to him. He clarified later he had gone to check on him, and that's all it was, that he was going to check on. And Dale Jr. said that on the broadcast, like, looks like Kyle Busch is going to check on William Byron because William Byron took a pretty hard hit. So a lot of anger at one guy. Now, I mentioned William Byron, who's coming up later in the show, by the way. He was kind of on somebody's list after a wreck. That first big one that Kyle Busch kind of put on Ricky Stenhouse Jr., which I think he was part of the blame there. But Brad Keselowski puts it on blocking.
Ricky was pushing. He didn't do anything wrong. It's just my fault. You know, we had a really fast Miller Lite Ford. And, you know, Dave, I'm just not wrecking enough people. I need to wreck more people so they'll stop throwing bad blocks. And that's what's happening to me on the plate track. So, you know, everybody that's watching, all them drivers out there, throw another bad block coming. I'm just going to drive through you and wreck you. So look out and tell Dave.
So Brad Keselowski not happy with William Byron. That's who he's talking about. William Byron was in front of him, went down for the block. You have to check up. That's plate racing, as they say. And things kind of spiral out of control. Now, Ricky Stenhouse Jr. may have been a part of that too. But I look at this and I know there are two sides to it. It's exciting for the fans. Like I said, it was a fun race. Because you have all the action, you have lead changes, you have the wrecks. I mean, that's just a product of what happens at Daytona. But, you know, these drivers that are so-called plate racers, yes, you're going to make mistakes, but you got to limit those mistakes. And I just don't think Ricky Stenhouse Jr. did a good job of that. William Byron's a rookie, so I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt. He's still learning. You know, he's still learning how to get around Daytona, and you never know what anyone's going to actually do when they make these moves. You have spotters talking to each other, but it's so quick that you don't know. You don't know what's going to happen. So William Byron, I think, ran a good race, was up there leading laps. It was good for his confidence. I think Brad Keselowski, there was a little bit of the heat in the moment. You can say that about just anybody. But I love it and I hate it all at the same time. And I know the drivers can't stand it. They hate going to a track where they know they're probably going to wreck. And that's basically what Daytona and Talladega are, with these rules and the plates and the cars so close together that you don't have any time to think, and you definitely don't have any wiggle room if you make a mistake. It's just you're going to take out everybody. A couple of the drivers that weren't involved in these things commented on the wrecks. We'll start with the second place finisher, Martin Truex Jr.
I think it's just it's a desperation kind of race. You know, there's a lot of guys that out there that need to win, want to win, you know, feel like it's their best shot, and you know, they're willing to take big risk, big gambles. I mean, we look at the guys that were involved in the wrecks tonight and involved in, you know, kind of instigating them. So they're all guys that were, you know, not willing to lift. We've seen a couple guys in wreck a few times, cause a few wrecks. So, yeah, just, you know, it's, there's a lot on the line. It's a big deal to win at this level, at this racetrack. And I think a lot of guys just, they wing it and go for broke.
And part of that is the system that has been created. If you win a race, you're in the playoffs. So when you have some drivers like a Ricky Stenhouse Jr., like a William Byron, that, you know, they're not going to be in contention every week. You can even put Eric Jones in that category. I think he will be eventually. But you're going to have to be more desperate than Kevin Harvick, Kyle Busch, Martin Truex Jr., Clint Bowyer, guys that have won this year, even Kurt Busch. I mean, drivers that are towards the front in the standings, they don't have to be as aggressive. So when you get to a track like Daytona or Talladega, where literally anybody could win, there's going to be a lot more aggression. And some of the drivers get it. Some get it and don't like it. And some just, you know, kind of move on. Third place finisher, prime example, the third place finisher, AJ Allmendinger, was a guy that, you know, he was going to go for the win if he was in position. Comes home third, but he gives his thoughts on what he thinks is contributing to the wrecks.
Some of the wrecks happen at the end of the stages, you know, at the 500 especially, and, you know, the stage points, it especially the start of the year, I think everybody's aggressive on them, trying to get more stage points and get your season kicked off right. Hell, I don't know what happened tonight. I mean, I was trying to ride at the back, and it just seemed like that the blocking, I mean, it seems aggressive. I mean, it is very aggressive, and you know, the urgency, whether it's to stay up front, even if there's a lot of time left to get back to the front, I'm not really sure why, but to me, that's what's causing it.
How aggressive is too aggressive? Is, you know, there used to be a gentleman's agreement about blocking. NASCAR tried to make it a rule that you can't block. Now it's, you know, you got to do what you got to do. But how aggressive is too aggressive? That's the biggest question with these races, because you're going to have, you know, BK is not going to go get Byron this week. Kyle Busch isn't going to go get Stenhouse this week. They'll wait. They'll wait till Talladega. Once Talladega comes around, it'll be the same old thing. Now, at the same time, people are going to be watching because they want to see. They want to see the retaliation. The drivers, I think, just, they don't like that. They don't like having to be that aggressive and have that reckless abandon. But that's the sport, especially when you go to a track like Daytona or like Talladega. Before we get to William Byron, one more clip. Have to play this from Kyle Busch, because he's asked again about Ricky Stenhouse Jr., and this will put this all in a nice little bow of what you should do when you make a mistake.
If you don't care, then don't reach out, you know. If you did it purposefully, then don't reach out, you know. But if you actually have some remorse and you're apologetic, or you need to be, then I tend to reach out, you know. When I make mistakes, or when I do things I feel like hindered other drivers, then I always reach out and just say something like, hey, man, I hate it I got into you. I'm sorry, you know, whatever. It's not going to change the fact, but at least you know, took that step. So that's my mindset. Other drivers have different mindsets.
And Kyle, I completely agree with you. If you make a mistake, if it's something you truly didn't mean to do, pick up the phone and say, I'm sorry. Leave a voicemail. Heck, he would send a text. He didn't even do that. But a fun weekend in Daytona. Very, very exciting. I mentioned William Byron. He was up front for some of that race, driver of the 24. He joins us next. He was at Pocono for a media day. You will hear from him on Chasing Checkers, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game Nashville app and on demand at thegamenashville.com.
Stay up to date on the latest news and sports. Take us wherever you may go with the Game Nashville app.
Tap that app.
Just search ESPN The Game Nashville on Google Play or iTunes and download the Game Nashville app now.
Welcome back into Chasing Checkers, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Chase McCabe here with you, and pleased to be joined by the driver of the number 24 Hendrick Chevrolet. William Byron is on the line with us. William, how are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah, appreciate it. And I know that you're getting ready for Kentucky this weekend, but we got Pocono coming up on July 29th, and you are actually at Camp Mincy, which is just outside of Pocono and in the racetrack. I know you're very involved in the Boy Scouts and have been your whole life. Why don't you tell us about that and what you're doing today?
Yeah, we're actually visiting the Boy Scouts at Camp Mincy today, and that's going to be a lot of fun, trying to promote the Gander Outdoors 400 coming up in a couple weeks. So looking forward to that. I was a Boy Scout myself, so it's pretty cool to kind of go back and experience that and understand what they're going through and what they're enjoying. So it should be a lot of fun with them.
And it's got to be cool for you now that you know you've had success coming up through the ranks in NASCAR and you have this notoriety to be able to pay it forward and help the Boy Scouts grow.
Yeah, it definitely is. I mean, I think that it's an important part of growing up and an important part of kind of becoming a leader, and whether that means, you know, a leader in your community or with a race team or whatever, I think it's important. So, yeah, I feel like it's always good to talk to them and also kind of understand what they're going through or the things that they're learning at their camp this summer. So I went through all those processes and am an Eagle Scout, so I think it's a lot of fun to go back and experience that.
Talking with William Byron, driver of the 24, Pocono coming up on July 29th. So I know you've had the one cup race there, have some experience on that track, but it's very unique being three turns and all the straightaways and the turns seem to be different.
Yeah, it is. It's a really unique track. I really enjoy it. It's a lot of fun. You get to go and experience each corner differently and set up your car for different parts of the racetrack to be competitive. So I feel like I know a lot going back there for the second race this year. It's a good chance to see what I've learned from the previous race and kind of understand what we can do better. So I'm looking forward to it. I think it's always a good time going to Pocono. I won there in the Truck Series, and I think I always enjoy going back there because of that.
What has this season been like for you, William, as you go from the Xfinity Rookie of the Year and the champion? You've won Rookie of the Year in multiple races in the Truck Series and have worked your way up relatively fast to the Cup Series. What's it been like kind of going from being the guy in the Xfinity Series to now kind of learning as a rookie in the Cup Series?
Yeah, it's definitely a different experience. I mean, you go from running trucks or Xfinity where, you know, you've got Cup guys in the field. But a lot of times you're running against your peers and kind of learning and running against them. So a lot of times there's some mistakes that guys make that you can capitalize on and make your car a little bit better than maybe what it is for that day. So that's not really the case in the Cup Series. You kind of have to run the best of what you've got for that day and try to just make the most of pit stops or restarts and all the little things that add up to being a couple positions better than maybe where you are capable of running with your car. So I think that's what's important in the Cup Series, just trying to make the most of those days and try to get more out of what you have on the racetrack.
I had your teammate Alex Bowman on last week, and I asked him this question, but when you look at Hendrick Motorsports right now, you have obviously Jimmy Johnson and the 7-time champion, the success that he has had over the years in the Cup Series, but then there's you, Alex, and Chase Elliott that are still relatively young. You're a rookie yourself. Alex, just getting back into the Cup Series, having taken over the 88 car. Do you ever feel pressure of just the history of Hendrick Motorsports and that you guys have to perform, or do you feel like that you've allowed yourself time to grow into being a Cup Series driver?
Yeah, I think it's probably the latter. I think I don't I look at it as just an opportunity. It's a great, great place to have an opportunity. You know, you've got a lot of resources, got a lot of people to lean on. So I feel like that is the biggest thing I look at in trying to improve my my skills and understanding of the race car. So I think that over time we've grown this year, and I think there's still a lot to go. But it's been great to be able to lean on Jimmy and have his advice and some of his understanding of what he's gone through to look back on, and also really competitive the last couple of years. And he has a lot of knowledge to think about and be able to grow from. So I look at those two guys and try to learn from them each week.
Talking with William Byron, the driver of the 24 Hendrick Chevy. He'll be racing at the Kentucky Speedway this weekend. Now, I know that esports is something that's very near and dear to you, that's kind of helped your racing career. When did you kind of first start getting into that?
I got into iRacing when I was 14 years old. So I was watching races and going to races and wanted to be a part of the sport somehow. And iRacing had come along at the time to be a little bit bigger platform to try to either just grow your skills or just have a good time with other race car drivers. So I grew up kind of doing iRacing for a few years before I got into a real race car. And I feel like that was a lot of the ways that I improved and really figured out that I was capable of driving. So always enjoyed it, still do it a little bit, and it's always a good thing to have to learn.
And that's something Dale Jr. is involved with, right?
Yeah, Dale actually drove on there for a few years and promoted it a lot. So I definitely learned about it from hearing Dale talk about it and promote iRacing as something that was legitimate to kind of be able to figure out who's the next biggest driver.
So you got to lead some laps last weekend at Daytona. I had a good run going. I know you got caught up in a crash, and there was a lot of those going on. But I did want to ask you about Brad Keselowski's comments about blocking, and he was a little irritated with you specifically. What is your response to what Brad had to say?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a product of super speedway racing. I think the biggest thing there is to try to stop the runs from happening, especially when you're the leader. So that's ultimately the goal. I think he'd do the same thing if he was in that position. I've seen him do the same thing. So definitely just try to do those things to try to win the race. And I don't feel any hard feelings about it. But I think Kentucky this weekend will be a totally different animal. Try to go there and be pretty competitive.
Is it good to kind of go to a track that's completely different from a super speedway that everybody can kind of cool off and forget about plate racing for a week?
Yeah, I mean, normally speedway racing is not really you don't get a lot of hot tempers, but this week there was just, I think, a product of kind of the time during the season when, guys are trying to win, especially for us, we're trying to win that race to get in the playoffs. So I think a lot of guys are doing that, and there's more aggression, and then there's a little bit of frustration too. So I think this weekend we'll be back to normal. Probably be back to the guys that are always fast. We're going to have to chase them like we always do. So we'll look forward to that challenge.
William, I appreciate the time. Best of luck this weekend and the rest of the year.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it.
William Byron, the driver, the number 24 Hendrick Chevrolet here on Chasing Checkers. Appreciate him for taking the time to join us. We've had two Hendrick drivers the last few weeks, Alex Bowman, William Byron. Two guys looking for their first win. That's been a theme on this show, the young guns that are looking for their first cup win. Erik Jones was in that category. He checked it off last weekend at Daytona. So who's going to be next? When I look at the list of drivers that have not won in the Cup Series, the names that pop out to me are as follows. Now, I will say, Trevor Bayne, he's got a win. Erik Jones has one win. Ryan Blaney has a win. But guys with no wins that we are expecting to see something out of. Bubba Wallace, he only has 22 races under his belt. Daniel Suarez, 54 races under his belt, and I will give him a little bit of a mulligan because last year it was December and he had no idea he was going to be driving a cup car and Carl Edwards unexpectedly retired. So those are two that I think people have on their list. Ty Dillon, 72 career races in the Cup Series for him. He is now a full-time Cup Series driver. he does not have a win. I'll throw Michael McDowell in this as well, a guy that was in contention last week and has slowly gotten into some better equipment, good plate program that with the team that he is on now. William Byron, only 18 races into his rookie year. 99 races for Alex Bowman. He does not have a win. Only has one career top five. The big one, Chase Elliott, 95 races into his Cup career, no wins at all. 26 top fives, no wins, 46 top tens. Chase Elliott, that's the guy that everybody's watching. So those are the young drivers looking for that first Monster Energy NASCAR Cup Series win. Who's going to be the next one? Look, Chase Elliott, to me, now that Erik Jones has won, because I kind of put them on the same playing field, now that Erik Jones has gotten a win, I think the pressure is beginning to mount on Chase Elliott. He has got to find a way to find victory lane. I don't think there is as much pressure on Alex Bowman right now, because even though he's not a rookie, this is his first full season in the Cup Series since getting back in. He basically took 2 years off outside of filling in for Dale Jr. some. So it's been very inconsistent for him. That's going to take a little time. Daniel Suarez, I think, kind of the same thing. Just needs reps. Could get there eventually. Erik Jones, now that he has the one, I think there's probably more in his future. Chase Elliott's got to find victory lane. Otherwise, the guy that everybody kind of thought was going to be the next big thing is going to be an epic failure, because this is a sport in which to be recognized as good or great, you got to win races. And he hasn't been able to do that yet. So I think William Byron will be in that category much later on. Again, only 18 races into his Cup career, defending Xfinity Series champion. Long, long way to go for him. Jeff Gordon didn't win in 1992, his rookie year. But I think for Chase Elliott, that pressure is mounting. Could Kentucky be where it finally happens? How many times have I asked that question in the short, short history of this show? But we will discuss next. It's Chasing Checkers, ESPN 102.5 The Game, online at thegamenashville.com, and always on the Game Nashville app.
What's up, Smashville? This is Ryan Porth here to tell you Preds Insiders will continue this summer on demand as we keep you up to date with all things Preds. Catch the newest edition of the Preds Insiders podcast every Wednesday at thegamenashville.com and throughout the weekend on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
That's right. The Cup Series is the big time. Welcome in, Chasing Checkers. Or back in, I should say. Chase McCabe here with you. ESPN 102.5 The Game. Online at thegamenashville.com. iTunes, SoundCloud, everywhere. Game Nashville app. Be sure you download that. My thanks to William Byron for joining the show. A very talented driver that I think is going to do big things in this series. But we're talking about Erik Jones and getting his first win last weekend at Daytona, and he led practice at the Kentucky Speedway this weekend. Kyle Larson also leading the way in one of the practices. But what was funny, before I get into the actual race, he was asked on NBC, Marty Snyder, during Cup Series practice about the mullet, because Erik Jones has a pretty awesome mullet. And is it going away? Take a listen.
The mullet, for sure. I've gotten a lot of comments on that. Apparently, it's a fan favorite. I don't know. I feel like it's kind of a staple at this point. But, more on the hair for sure.
All right, so we're keeping the mullet?
Yeah, I think it's going to have to go, unfortunately.
Oh, wait. It's breaking news. What?
It's not my choosing. I got some pictures I got to take coming up, and I don't know if I can be rocking the mullet in that, so I'm going to have to trim it up at least.
All right, earth-shattering news there, Rick. The mullet is getting the 86 from Erik Jones. I can't believe that.
Wow.
Why lose the mullet after all that attention it got?
This is a terrible day for NASCAR. Terrible day for NASCAR. Look, you look at success stories. I mean, Mike Gundy, that mullet. Jeff Fisher was rocking one back in the day. Now Erik Jones gets his first win, and he's got to get rid of the mullet for pictures. This is a terrible day. Almost said terrible. Terrible day for NASCAR. But he's one of the leaders in practice, a couple of different practice sessions. So the opening practice, Ryan Blaney was fast, 187.3. Kyle Busch showing speed. Kyle Larson, of course, guy that looking for his first win of the year, and then Eric Jones. So could this be the weekend that Chase Elliott gets up there? I'm going to say no. I'm going to say it's not going to happen. And I feel like this is a subject we're going to have every week on the show until it does happen. And I, as I said in the last segment, Eric Jones getting that win puts even more pressure on him. But it's a part of it. It's what he signed up for. I think eventually it's going to happen. And when it does, it could be like Kyle Larson that more and more come after that. But it just simply has not happened. And I know Chevy has had their struggles, only one win. Austin Dillon getting that this year in the Daytona 500. And the Camaro, they've struggled with that. But eventually, the excuses are going to run out. And you're going to have to figure out a way to get into victory lane. So who will we see in victory lane at the Kentucky Speedway? A relatively short history for this racetrack, at least on the Cup Series side. Kyle Busch was the first winner in 2011. And then Brad Keselowski has three wins there. He won in 2012, 2014, 2016. You do the math, you look at the patterns, it would say that 2018, Brad Keselowski will be your winner. He seems to do it every 2 years. In the off years, Kyle Busch, of course, winning that first race. Matt Kenseth won in 2013. It was the year I was there, I believe. I went in 15. Kyle Busch wins in 2015, and then Truex won it last year. Brad Keselowski is a guy that I think after last week and the frustration, he would like to have a win, and this would be a good spot for him to do it. He always seems to run well there. Kyle Busch does as well with the two wins. Seems to know how to read turn three, because turn three can be tricky at times for these drivers, but should be an exciting race in the Quaker State 400. I love the night races in the middle of the summer. I think it's cool because it's hot and it's sticky, especially when you're down south. And that just creates excitement, the tempers. You know, we got Bristol coming up maybe a month from now or so. That's going to be fun. You'll have Darlington Labor Day weekend for the throwback weekend. Just these Saturday night races are just cool when the weather is hot. So that's going to be on NBCSN this weekend at Kentucky. So as we have a few minutes here on Chasing Checkers, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Find us on iTunes, search for Chasing Checkers, like it, subscribe. Also on SoundCloud, you can follow there. I tweet out the links at Chase on Game and at 102.5 The Game every week. So really appreciate the support. And just a programming note, next week I will actually be in Atlanta at SEC Media Day, so we're going to be doing some things from there. But hope to have Larry McReynolds. It looks like that's going to possibly happen, which is perfect because he can talk about things going on. But I also want to ask him about this next guy that I'm going to talk about. So July 12th, 1993, I had just turned 6 years old. I don't remember too much about being 6 years old, but I do remember taking a trip to Fort Myers Beach, Florida, with my dad. We went down there for, I think, a week. And, he was in need of a vacation. I was a kid, loved playing on the beach. So we went to Fort Myers. At that age, I didn't know a lot about racing, but I knew a couple of different things in 1993. Richard Petty was too dang old, as I said, or my dad would say, and I would repeat it, but was the greatest, one of the greatest, if not the greatest driver of all time as a seven-time champion. I knew that the black number three was the Intimidator and Dale Earnhardt was the man. And I knew some of the different race cars and the drivers associated with them. I knew Alan Kilwicki drove the Hooters car and he had passed away. I knew Rusty Wallace was in the black and yellow Miller car. I knew that there was a rainbow car that was driven by a young up-and-coming driver named Jeff Gordon, and I didn't like him for some reason. But then I knew about the Texaco car, the number 28, driven by Davey Allison. I didn't know the history of the Alabama gang. I didn't know much about Bobby Allison or Donnie Allison or the fight. I didn't really know much about Davey at the time. I just knew he was a race car driver, and he won and was pretty darn good. So July 12th, 1993, I'm at Fort Myers Beach, and my dad and his girlfriend at the time are watching the TV, and they break in, and they talk about a helicopter crash at the Talladega Super Speedway and that Davey Allison had passed away. I did not realize then the connection I would have professionally and personally to Davey Allison or the Allison family, but I knew that that was a big day for NASCAR and clearly a big day for a family. FS1 and NASCAR Race Hub did a tremendous job this week with a piece on Davey's life, and I learned things that I did not know, that Liz Allison, his widow, who I had the pleasure of working with for many years, had actually made Davey an organ donor, and Davey's heart helped save a life and give another family five more years with a father and a husband. I didn't know that. And I thought that FS1 did a tremendous job with that piece and had Liz and Krista and Robbie featured in it, talking about 25 years ago and what that day was like. Krista and Robbie were very young. A brief history, I actually went to high school with Krista Allison, knew who her dad was, her grandfather, of course, had met Liz a couple of times and then ended up getting to work with Liz, go cover races, do shows with her and Darren. But just to kind of go down memory lane and watch some of the finishes and some of the races, Davey Allison was that guy. And there are a lot of people that are fans of NASCAR because they liked Davey Allison because he was just a guy. He was a guy like them. But he was talented, won a lot of races. Hueytown, Alabama, liked to go fishing, was a family man. And at 32 years old, which is weird because I'm 31, it just kind of makes you think that, you know, look, you never know. You never know when it's going to be your time. And then you also kind of think about what would the history of NASCAR look like? Would Jeff Gordon be a four-time champion? Would Dale Earnhardt be a seven-time champion? Because 1993 was title number six, I believe, for Dale Earnhardt. I remember him driving, him and Rusty Wallace driving around Atlanta backwards doing the Polish victory lap. And one of them had a 28 flag for Davey and one had a 7 flag for Alan Kulwicki. And, of course, the Polish victory lap was made famous by Alan Kulwicki. I do remember that. But would all of that have happened? Because I'm pretty sure Davey Allison was going to win a championship. And it was probably going to be that year. And then once he won that first championship, he was probably going to win another one. How different would history look with Davey Allison? And for him to be elected into the NASCAR Hall of Fame this year, 25 years after his untimely passing, I just think is not going to make it go away for his family, but it's definitely going to help. So I wanted to take a little time in the show to reflect on Davey Allison and give a shout out to Liz, Krista, and Robbie, and FS1 and NASCAR Race Hub for putting that piece together because it was tremendous. It's on NASCAR.com. Go check it out. And there's also clips that they have on the site remembering Davey Allison from Mark Martin, Marty Smith, different people that were touched by Davey Allison. So that's going to do it for this week. Chasing Checkers here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. I am Chase McCabe. Follow me on Twitter at Chase Young Game. Subscribe on iTunes, Chasing Checkers, SoundCloud, and of course, TheGameNashville.com.